welcome to A Year on the Farm. I am your host, Kimberly Allen. Join me as I share my small farm journey on Vancouver Island and connect with other female farmers about how to grow beautiful food, manage a farm, and feed our communities. Hello, and welcome to A Year on the Farm. I am your host, Kimberly Allen. Today, I am really excited to share this interview with you. Arzina Hamir is the owner of Amara Farm on Vancouver Island. With her husband and family, they operate a 25-acre certified organic farm with vegetable and fruit production. Amara Farm is a member of the Comox Valley Farmers Market, run a CSA program and farm stand, and contribute to local organizations with food and farming education. Arzina is also a director for the Comox Valley Regional District and a champion for local food. Arzina has an undergrad degree in crop science and a master's degree in sustainable agriculture. I can't think of a better person to speak to about resiliency in small-scale farming. Hi, Arzina, and welcome. Thank you so much for your time today.
Not at all. Thanks for inviting me, Kim.
And I would like to start with a land acknowledgement that both you and I live and work and farm on the unceded territory of the Comox First Nation. So I feel particularly grateful to have this conversation with you today and to share it with our community, as you have been an inspiration for me since I moved to the Comox Valley. Of course, met you probably first when I was a customer at the market. Mm-hmm. And then joining the market, I have to say, you were one of the folks that you were always very positive and welcoming. And for new people at a farmer's market, for new vendors, it makes such a huge difference. And so I just want to thank you and acknowledge that. And I know that I'm not the only recipient of your kindness and generosity in this community. So you're a farmer, but also our local representative. In fact, you're my local representative, which is also awesome. And a major focus for you has been your commitment to addressing climate change and making a lasting impact to help set us on a path of sustainability. Mm-hmm. And we have talked about this before, but the climate emergency is here. And this is no longer a what if, but it's a here we are in this point in time. And I feel that small scale farmers can play a major role in shifting this. And that to me starts with resiliency. So maybe you can share with us some changes that you've made on your farm to be more resilient.
Yeah, absolutely. And such an important topic. Kim, you and I lived through the heat dome of 2021, and that will forever be burned in my memory. We have 26 acres. We are actively farming about 5 of those acres in a mixed vegetable and fruit farm. So this actually goes back, I guess it goes back to the original concept of why we started farming. A, to grow food for our community, but B, to also grow that food in a way that not only benefited the environment, but maybe corrected some of the previous, ills of the land. Having been in production for many, many years, we wanted to restore the organic matter, increase the biodiversity on the farm, and really take care of particularly the soils. And we did that by increasing the amount of compost we were putting in, and obviously we're certified organic, so all of our inputs are they're organic based, they're non synthetic chemicals. So what we're trying to do is really build, and part of that is building the resiliency of the soil. Now, having said that, in 2015, so 6 years ago, we also had a fairly extensive drought here in the valley. And I believe it was almost 12 weeks of no rain. And our farm was much younger at the time. We didn't have a lot of great systems set up, and we ran out of water. We had to sacrifice a number of crops. Our onion crop, pretty much we had to let go. And it was a scramble between trying to water a newly established blueberry field and four greenhouses, like each needing that water so critically. And I vowed after that year that I will never do that again. So one of the ways that we have sort of embedded some water resiliency on our farm is that we decided to invest in installing a dugout on the farm to capture winter rains. Like, we have an excess of water in the winter time here in the Comox Valley. And, you know, water just, it just streams across our property. And we wanted to capture that and then use that water in the summer months. So we put in a dugout. It is 30 by 40 feet by 18 feet deep. So it holds almost 500,000 gallons of water. And I'm so happy to say that we have never run out of water since we've installed that. So when we did go through this heat dome of 2021, one of the things that we didn't have to worry about was water. And that was so helpful for my mental health to not struggle about having enough water for the plants. We still had plenty.
So, that's really amazing.
Yeah. I'm so glad that we invested. It was at the time, a big investment. That size of a hole in the ground, for folks who can't imagine how much soil that is, it was 110 dump truck loads of soil. So it's a very large hole. It costs, I think it costs about $12,000 to install, so a fairly big chunk of change. Having said that, as soon as we had that type of water availability, we were able to grow salad greens and other crops that we couldn't imagine growing because they are so water intensive, and it paid itself in a year. So, if nothing, we know that our summers are going to be coming more and more hotter and drier. And we can't continue to expect our aquifers and our rivers to be able to supply everything that we need. So I'm really encouraging as many farms as possible to consider installing this type of asset. I call it an asset, even though it's taking land out. We have our dugout in a wet spot in our farm anyways, that never really was able to get into production. So it's critically important, I think, especially for vegetable growers that require water, that you store some of that water on your farm.
That's amazing. I know that the last time I was at your farm, Neil, your husband, gave us a tour of the dugout. It is fascinating. And you have a aeration system and pump system, and it's honestly, and also what I loved about it was that it got me thinking about, okay, where on our farm do we have a spot where we could do this that maybe isn't ideal for growing and is perhaps, could be better utilized for some kind of water capture. And we, of course, we definitely felt the burn of the heat dome, and it immediately had us thinking about just that we needed to find a way to store more water. And we're spending our winter slowly trying to improve that and come up with strategies. Mm-hmm. And also for me, the big thing was, okay, what should we be growing? If we have more and more heat coming in summer, then I think my immediate thing was, I want to come off this dependence of the lettuce and salad greens being a part of our business. And it's for me, one of those vegetables, you can't turn it into anything. So it's and I'm not sure if the consumer even knows how much water it takes to wash vegetables, even after we've grown them and weeded them. And yes. And then I think for me, when I was new to farming, it was the amount of water it takes to wash certain vegetables for sure.
Yeah.
And so that's a big consideration for people starting out with farming. And I think
Absolutely.
that balance of building your soil and working on water systems is, these are two tandem ideas that farms can constantly be improving every
Yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And the great thing about soil is that it will do its job if you put the right things into it. And that's what's miraculous is
It really is. You know,
and have faith. Like if you put a little work and effort, and do some cover crops and do a little research and testing, your soil will be perfect for you. It wants to, I
Yes.
feel like it's this active living part of our farms that's part of the family.
Yeah.
And it
Agree.
really it wants to be good at growing food.
Yes. You know, I can give you some more examples of exactly that. Like, so the heat dome hit our farm, the last week of June and into early July. And at that time, our black currants were just ripening. They had just turned color. And so for folks who don't like normally that time of the year, temperatures are in the 20, 20, 22 kind of range. And it went to 39 almost overnight. And it was a shock on me personally in, trying to cope with that level of heat. And I was so worried that we would lose a whole bunch of our plantings. Here's what I saw happened. The lettuce greens, the salad greens, yes, they fried. There's just no way of getting around that level of heat. No amount of watering was going to keep them in production. Interestingly though, and then fruit that had already colored, that was already a dark color, raspberries, black currants, they also fried. However, the plants themselves, they rebounded, and I was just so shocked that they would continue in production, because it did cool down after that week of heat, and we were still able to get production happening. And the only way I can see that that happened was because of the time that we invested in building the soil, having deep roots, having a lot of organic matter, having some, biology in the soil. I think really contributed to the resiliency, especially of the perennials on our farm. And yeah, that's the only way that I can see that why our perennials still, we didn't lose any plants to that heat dome. So that was a great affirmation that we're going in the right direction, that we didn't have like more crop failure than we did.
And you speak to some of your perennial crops, which I've been buying your blueberries for my baking for a number of years. And we bought black currants and elderberry from you. And I know Neil is really passionate about his hazelnut
Yes,
project, which he's had Dennis, Dennis and his students to the farm for that. So transitioning some of your land to use for perennials. I know that this is something that maybe when somebody is new on a piece of land, or it like the appeal can be that typical market garden vegetable production, one season, sell lots of fresh veggies, but the perennial plants have so much to offer us. And I feel like there are more and more farmers who are heading in the direction of transitioning some land for perennial crops if they don't have it already, or if they
Yeah.
haven't had blueberry production or that sort of thing. And maybe you can speak a little bit to your decision about focusing on that and where you see that going.
Yeah. So, I mean, I should first say that, when we first started farming, like my heart was in the vegetables. Like I am such a vegetable person. I love them. There's not really a vegetable that I don't like eating myself. But, Neil and I are now in our 50s, and I was noticing that my knees are not so happy with all of the the up and down. And we actually very selfishly went into perennials primarily just for our own like physical bodies. I jokingly say I don't want to plant anything that the harvest is below waist height anymore. Like I can't do it anymore.
I love that.
I can't squat. I can't do that on my knees stuff anymore. Like that's for the young people. And so what we've done like on our vegetables, we have a crew of three who are there for the full season, and then we add an extra one person for the heavy months of July and August. So there's four people like working on 2 acres of vegetables. Like it's intense. It's labor intensive, the style of farming that we do. But if we go any larger, we're going to now run into having to like the 2 to 7 acre size is actually a really inefficient size for the type of farming that we do. We will actually lose more money if we sort of grow any, if we just grow and bleed into that size. So we've capped our vegetable production now to this is the max that we're comfortable doing in this style of labor, like high labor farming. Whereas the perennials do take labor at specific times of the year, but as you plant and then you're not having to replant. We do use a lot of mulches in our blueberries. It's a sawdust mulch, and then in the other perennials, we use a landscape fabric. It's a plastic woven fabric to cut down on weeding. So it's much less labor intensive. So I have to say, like we went into perennials more from that point of view of just the impact on our bodies. However, perennials, especially the woody perennials, have an incredible way of absorbing carbon and creating that woody material. So as a climate mitigating crop, they are so great to have on a farm. And we now are looking at well, we've planted over 500 black currant bushes, and then an acre of mixed apple, pear, and hazelnut as a mini orchard. And we space the rows in the orchard 17 feet apart, so we can actually put certain vegetables in the alleyways as well. So coming back to like, yeah, as a new market gardener, I couldn't have really foreseen planting perennials because they're a big investment, right? They don't necessarily pay you back in the first even 2 to 3 years. And I totally understand as market growers, like you want that cash flow happening. So I'm not saying that, people should just forget vegetables. That's certainly the cash flow on our farm comes from the vegetable side of things. But wherever possible, I'm encouraging farmers, especially market gardeners, to look at ways of incorporating perennials, both as another crop. Because berries, like people don't stop for lettuce, they don't come to our farm stand for lettuce, but they will come for fruit, and they'll come from miles around. So it's another way of pulling customers into your production, into your farm, to your farm stand at the farmers market. But they have an incredible this ability of growing woody material. And even like when you have to prune, we also invested into a chipper so that we wouldn't be losing any of those prunings off of the farm. So we chip all of our prunings and then apply that as a mulch around the farm. So we're trying to keep as much of that carbon on the farm as possible.
I love that idea of the chipper. I was actually researching a chipper.
You know what? One is for sale in Strathcona Regional District. I just saw it this
Oh,
morning. So
and
keep your eye. Yeah.
yeah, because we ha are our most of our land is forest. And this year, with all the storms, we've actually had quite a number of trees come down. and we can't get through enough of it ourselves. But I, my first thought was we should be chipping that. So that's kind of on my wish list. Mm-hmm. And one strategy I know that I've thought about, because our farm is surrounded by forest, is that there are areas of the farm that aren't ideal for growing vegetables, just mm-hmm. way too many pests and slugs. And so then we started thinking, what could we put there that's perennial? Yeah. And that might be another strategy for a farm, like looking at what would grow in a place that maybe isn't ideal for the market vegetables. Mm-hmm. And so just being a little more creative with, you know, farm planning.
Yeah.
And then also thinking about, you know, employing perennials for wind barrier, yeah. and depending on your location. And I think also, you know, for people who are doing the small scale farming and are passionate about resiliency, that also means, you know, collectively we need to be importing less food and mm-hmm. purchasing more food close to home. And something like berry production is a great example of how, when we can boost that in our communities, or another kind of crop that is in demand that we end up importing,
yeah.
That's a way to fill a need. And, you know, it is a long-term investment, or maybe look at something that a local farm isn't offering. Mm-hmm. Where are the opportunities for a perennial crop?
Well, I love that idea that you framed it in, you know, understanding your land and not fighting your land. Like if you have a wet area that's, you know, shaded, trying to really pump out vegetables in that area can be quite a difficult, like you're going to be spinning your wheels a lot. And so what does that land want to grow? And that's why part of, you know, part of the thing that keeps me always interested in farming is experimenting every year. So, you know, we try different crops all the time. So, you know, in the sort of more wet area, we've found that elderberry grows really nicely. And even though it's not native to this area, black elderberry, it's able to withstand some of the extremes in soil moisture that we get. We often have standing water on our land for a few days when we get inundated with rain. And the elderberry seems to just be totally fine with that. And then at the same time, in our greenhouses, when it does definitely, even like not during a heat dome, it will get over 40 degrees. We have high tunnels, so they're not glass, they're poly tunnels with roll up sides. But you know, when it's in the 30s outside, it's in the 40s inside the tunnel. And so some of the adaptations that we've seen is I'm looking for crops that can withstand those high summer temperatures. And unfortunately for us, slicing tomatoes, we've just seen that they just get sunburned on our farm too much. So we've experimented with crops, and I'm going to continue doing this. We've tried ginger, and I'll continue with that. We did a test of sweet potatoes. It was okay. We'll try it one more year. But so constantly experimenting and trying things on a small scale and seeing if they'll work, I think is something that farmers are going to probably have to continuously do. We may not be able to rely on the old, you know, the stuff that we did, the way we've done farming for the last 20 plus years. I think we're going to have to adapt and try both different production techniques and different crops.
I absolutely agree. And I think that's where the small farms who maybe have the flexibility to pivot a little more easily and are looking for what we can grow with the current climate situation are the ones that will be feeding our communities.
Absolutely.
And so my first point of research, the Google, was what can you grow in the South? mm-hmm. Because I thought, if my greenhouse, I'm the same as you, I think we have exactly the same. We have one high polytunnel. And Okay, so we grew a ton of melons this year. What else can we grow that traditionally wasn't growing in this area? And so that's where I went with that. Like, what kinds of vegetables can withstand these temperatures? And so we're going to do a few experiments. I experimented with ginger this year too, and I was so happy with it. I'm continuing with it.
Good.
I probably won't grow enough to share, maybe for our CSA. It's mostly for our own consumption. We actually do eat a lot of ginger
Nice.
and we dry a lot. So, using the dehydrator for it, I put it in my baking and tea. So that's a lot of fun. And that speaks to something that we've talked about before too, is people, like the consumer, adapting to what food can be consumed here. I think, and that's where I have a project coming where I feel like I want to bridge that gap, that I think there's actually just a skill set missing in terms of, and knowledge about, like the food that can actually grow here that we could actually eat year round, and how to prepare it. And without labor intensive practices of preserving and things like that, which many people don't have time for that. And so I think part of it is like the farmers being creative and finding new things to grow, and then helping consumers realize you can eat year-round local food. It's just going to look different than what you were used to. And I even find in our community, we have a lot of people transplanted from the Lower Mainland. For example, I'm from Vancouver. You came here from Richmond, and even their food looks different year round. Just that little bit south, there's a change. So I feel like that's kind of where we might be going with this. I know you have a very positive outlook on farming, and so, looking forward, what do you see that's hopeful?
Well, one thing that's come out of the COVID pandemic is, people's appreciation for supply chains, and that, the food isn't magically appearing on store shelves, and that if they want to see any level of food security in their community, they need to support their local farmers. So that's been a real blessing for me, and I think for our farmers market. I've seen, for us particularly, we didn't see a dip in sales, which was great. And people are committing to CSAs like yours, and we've started one as well. So that gives me a lot of hope for the future that, the community is really committed to supporting us. And the fact that they're willing to put their money where their mouth is, and not just have this as a token level of support. I really hope to see a new wave of young people coming into farming. And your comment at the onset about creating a welcoming community, I think, is incredibly important. It's tough to start farming, especially in a brand new community where you don't know anyone. Farming requires a huge, like, it's almost like raising a child, as you probably know. You don't do it alone. It takes a village of people who support you in all different ways. And when you come into a community new and you don't have that support system, it's incredibly difficult. And so if we want to see new farms survive, we need to support them. So I'm there, and I know you're there, and love that this podcast is here, because this is the type of information that new farmers really, really need.
Oh, Arzina, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today. Listeners, you can learn more about Arzina's work and her farm, Amara Farm. It will be posted in the show notes. And be sure to follow A Year on the Farm on Instagram. And if you have any questions for me or after you've listened to this, please let me know. And I would love to add to this conversation for you. Arzina, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You. Thanks so much, Kim.
Thank you for listening to A Year on the Farm today. Don't forget, new episodes arrive every Tuesday anywhere that you listen to podcasts. You can also connect with our community on Instagram at A Year on the Farm and visit our website at gatherfarmandkitchen.com to learn more about our farm and to sign up for our email newsletter. Please remember, beautiful food is in your future.